With great power comes great responsibility.
Compromise where you can. Where you can't, don't. Even if everyone is telling you that something wrong is something right, even if the whole world is telling you to move, it is your duty to plant yourself like a tree, look them in the eye and say no, you move.
Never step onto the battlefield of ideas unprepared. Before you enter the fray, you need a plan. And there's no better place to get one than right here on Tactics with host Caleb Colquitt. The Situation Room goes live now on News Radio 1440.
Well, good afternoon again, everybody. Apparently, there was an issue with the audio, and I'm not sure exactly what was happening there, what was going on, but do apologize for that. Hopefully, everything is fixed and working. By the way, a special thanks to Jacob Bear, my old co-host. You may remember when I started here at News Radio 1440, Bear was my co-host here, and I genuinely appreciate him giving me a heads up that my audio was not working. So thank you so much, Jacob Bear. I definitely appreciate it. But anyway, so one housekeeping thing real quick. I know that the show's schedule has been a mess, and I am genuinely sorry about that. I know that we've been inconsistent. The reason for that is there's a lot of upheaval going on behind the scenes here, and what we're doing is the reason that all that has been taking place is because we're going to be moving to a new studio, and we're also contemplating a different showtime, considering maybe 6 o'clock. So if you have any comments on that, any feedback, if there's a time that might work a little bit better for you, we're open to some suggestions. So feel free to do that here in the comment section of this video. Or as always, you can email us at tacticsradio@gmail.com. So any of those options, tacticsradio@gmail.com, or any of the comments on the videos, we will get those. We'll read them if you have any suggestions for the show. So thank you so much for doing that for us, and we're doing the best that we can to make sure the content that we provide for you works for you, it works around your schedule, and so we're doing the best that we can to ensure that that happens. So getting to the meat and potatoes of what is actually going on today. It's been an interesting 24 hours. Because somebody that was seen as the consummate, almost a little mini Trump, somebody that was presumed to be, even though I never really thought that he was necessarily that close to the Trump administration, has now had a falling out with President Trump. And this really should surprise nobody. There have been tons of people, not only from the state of Alabama, but from inside the White House. There have been staff members that Trump turns on, and boy, when Trump turns on somebody, he really turns on them. We've seen that happen with Cohen and Jeff Sessions, and actually, he never really turned on Michael Flynn, but he's definitely done it with other staff members. The Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson. I mean, when Trump turns on people, boy, he turns on you. And that is actually mostly true in this one, but the president and his family have had a falling out. And to give you some context and where all this started, there was a rumor that started this whole cascade of events that Roy Moore, that's right, Judge Roy Moore, who ran against Doug Jones in the previous Senate election, former Chief Justice of the state of Alabama, Roy Moore, announced that, or it was rumored that he was going to announce his candidacy for the Senate today. Now, it is currently 5:50, and I checked the news right before the show started. So unless the news reports just haven't filtered in and he actually did announce and I didn't catch it, that was not true. That rumor was not true, but Roy Moore reacted to it anyway and said that he could run and would beat Doug Jones in 2020. And that was from Roy Moore's official Twitter. So this was the real Roy Moore, saying that if he ran against Doug Jones, he would win. And it elicited this response from Donald Trump Jr., Donald Trump's son. You mean, like last time, you're literally the only candidate who could lose a GOP seat in pro-Trump, pro-USA Alabama. Running for office should never become a business model. If you actually care about hashtag MAGA more than your own ego, it's time to ride off into the sunset, Judge. Now, normally, normally when I'm observing a tweet from the Trump family, I usually agree with the general premise or direction, but there's a caveat or there's something that I didn't agree with in the approach, even if I agreed with the message. I can't find anything wrong with that tweet. Nothing. Donald Trump Jr. basically spelled it out, was 100% accurate. Roy Moore was the only candidate in that field last time that could have lost to Doug Jones. There is no doubt in my mind about that, as much as I have some misgivings about Luther Strange and did not want Luther Strange to win. When Luther Strange ran, had he become the nominee, there's no doubt in my mind he would have beat Doug Jones. Luther Strange would have totally won that election. Mo Brooks, of course, would have won that election. There were even some lesser candidates that if they got their name out there and won the primary, probably still would have won the election. Roy Moore was the only one that could have messed it up. And just to be clear, I don't hate Roy Moore. I don't bear any animosity against him. There's a lot of stuff that he did for the state of Alabama that I really like. But Roy Moore was the only person that could have lost that election. And that's, I think Donald Trump Jr. was exactly correct on that. And this is one of the rare occasions where I actually say that revisiting an old election may be productive. Because normally, visiting old elections, they're interesting case studies from time to time. But actually going through it and having the old arguments over again, it's not productive. It doesn't make any sense. This is one of those times where I think actually, in a lot of ways, it could. Because you're talking about two people that would be running against each other for the same seat, and it's the same two candidates. So there's a lot to be learned about how the future could play out by looking at the past. And this is just my prediction. If Judge Moore actually becomes the Republican nominee, and he could, if that takes place, then even if he does beat Doug Jones, it's close. And I think there's still a very real chance that Doug Jones winds up beating Roy Moore again. As Donald Trump Jr. just pointed out, he's the only one that could have lost last time. He's probably the only one that could lose this time. Alabama is a ruby red state, and they'll vote for just about any Republican against a Democrat. But long before there was this whole cloud of uncertainty about whether or not Roy Moore was a child molester or any of that other stuff, which, by the way, it's her word against his. There's no real conclusive proof. This was never litigated or hashed out in a court of law. And I just don't think that there's anywhere near enough evidence to treat the guy as though he's guilty of something like this, when the best you can do is say there's someone that claims that he did this and there's no way to corroborate the story. It's the same standard that I held in the Kavanaugh hearings, so on and so forth. If you cannot prove or at least say that it is very likely that somebody did this, you have to treat the person as though they're innocent. But even you take that away, even if everybody operated under the same premise that I do on that, which they don't, you have to admit that this is something that is going to continue to be a cloud over the Roy Moore campaign, that there are still going to be people that have at least that little seed of doubt in their mind that are going to act on that. But even without that, even if you take that away completely, there were a lot of people that had a lot of questions about Judge Moore way before that even took place, way before the Washington Post article broke that suggested he might be a child molester. And again, I still don't buy into that. Especially when you look at how some of the stories fell apart and we found out later actually were fabricated and were admitted to have been fabricated. Even if you take that away completely, there were a lot of Republicans with saying that there was a lot of baggage when it came to Roy Moore. And they were right in doing that. And this seems to be sort of the worldview that Donald Trump Jr. is coming from. So I want to go ahead and read these other tweets from the president himself, because Donald Trump Senior, the president, he actually weighed in on this a few minutes later. So here's a tweet from Donald Trump. Republicans cannot allow themselves again to lose the Senate seat in the great state of Alabama. This time it will be nothing for 6 years. It will be for 6 years, not two. I have nothing against Roy Moore, and unlike many other Republican leaders, wanted him to win. But he didn't, and probably won't. This is the second tweet. If Alabama does not elect a Republican to the Senate in 2020, Many of the incredible gains that we have made during my presidency may be lost, including our pro-life victories. Roy Moore cannot win, and the consequences will be devastating, judges and Supreme Court justices. Now, Donald Trump hits several points in this, and he's exactly right. I mean, you go by point by point, some of the things that Donald Trump is talking about when you're talking about the balance of the Senate, Supreme Court judges, justices, judges, that will be in jeopardy if we lose the Senate. And usually Donald Trump, even if I agree with the general premise, the general idea that he's going for, I disagree with the delivery. There was nothing in that delivery that was harsh. He even emphasized he has nothing against Roy Moore. This isn't because he hates Judge Moore, thinks that he's a terrible person or any of that. All he's saying is, I don't think the guy can win. And because I don't think the guy can win, people in Alabama should pick somebody else. And he's also right in pointing out that if something happens and Roy Moore gets in and he doesn't win, then that's 6 years of Doug Jones instead of just two. And 2 years have been more than enough. Those 2 years should have never happened in the first place. So everything that Donald Trump is doing, every point that he's bringing up, 100% fair. And he's not even doing it in a hateful or vindictive way. He's just saying, look, there's just not much chance this guy wins. And if you're looking at this slate of candidates, and the slate of candidates we've got right now, whether you're talking about Bradley Byrne, Jim Ziegler, Mooney, Mo Brooks says he's not running, so I'm going to take his word on it and say that he's not running, but this would apply to him as well. You're looking at this slate of candidates. You're looking at several of them that are real conservatives, have a long-standing conservative voting record. And then you're also looking at Roy Moore. All of these guys not only beat Doug Jones, but beat him in a landslide. It's not even close. They win it walking away. And then Roy Moore, who is conservative on most things, but he's not experienced as a legislature. He doesn't seem to know a whole lot about the proceedings of the Senate, and he has a giant question mark on whether he can win or not. Why would you not go with another one of those candidates? And if your big thing is you're just a Trump loyalist and we should always go with whoever Trump endorses, well, first of all, Trump's not endorsing him this time. And second of all, if that's your big qualification, the person that seems to be the most pro-Trump right now would be Tommy Tuberville. And so I don't understand why you wouldn't go with him. So I tell you what, it looks like we've got a caller on line one. Let's go ahead and go to the phones. Good afternoon. What's your name? Hello? Line one, that's you. You there? Hello? Okay, for whatever reason, our phones are not picking up. Sorry about that. I guess we'll just have to go on to something else. But if you want to weigh in, by all means, call back. But anyway, so that's really where we're standing right now. If you're a Trump loyalist and you just want somebody that's an outsider and you want somebody that's pro-Trump, Roy Moore is not your guy. And the fact that a lot of the people that tended to be the Trump loyalist and really liked Trump and really liked that sort of maverick personality that were sort of drawn to the cult of personality that is Roy Moore in the last election, the fact that Trump is not endorsing Roy Moore this time, that is a devastating blow. I mean, not being endorsed by the president or having the president talk bad about you, that's a problem in this state because of how pro-Trump the state of Alabama is. That's hard for anybody, but when you're talking about Judge Moore, that's especially rough for Moore, because as Trump was pointing out, a lot of people in the Republican leadership didn't like Roy Moore, didn't want the president to support him. Trump went out on a limb and supported him anyway, even though there were a lot of Republicans that didn't. And he's saying, look, we shouldn't have done this. Should have backed a different horse. And he's saying that it's not malice or animosity or anything like that. I'm just saying the guy can't win. And that's, you know, from Trump's perspective, probably pretty solid. And what's so strange about this is a lot of the Trump loyalists are saying that they want to vote for Moore just because he's the most pro-Trump candidate, which, again, Tommy Tuberville's an incredibly pro-Trump candidate. It seems to be the only thing that he can talk about. But I think really that goes back to people will try to justify almost anything by using a false choice. And what they're doing right now is they're setting up a false choice between Moore and Bradley Byrne. and they don't like the fact that Bradley Byrne was not a very vocal, open Trump supporter early on in Trump's candidacy, even though the guy has voted with Trump as a member of the House several times, and he has a very conservative voting record, not one of the most conservative, but certainly more conservative than a lot of members of the House, and he tends to vote with the president a lot. That doesn't matter because he didn't jump on the Trump bandwagon fast enough for their liking, and because of that, they think that somehow Bradley Byrne is super anti-Trump, which doesn't make any sense. And because of that, they have a grudge that they are irrationally holding on to and saying, well, we have to stop Bradley Byrne, so I'm going to vote for Judge Moore. But you have other options. Again, I don't think that that's a rubric of how conservative somebody is. I don't think that's a good way to scale who I'm going to vote for. Just how much does this guy like this other guy that I like? That's a dumb way to choose a candidate. But even if that's your criteria, that no longer makes sense because Trump doesn't even want you to vote for Judge Moore. And out of these candidates, there are candidates that did jump on the Trump bandwagon very early, like Tommy Tuberville. So it just really makes absolutely no sense that people are even considering going for Moore on this when there's a decent chance that he winds up losing this thing. And I think a lot of it goes back to the revenge vote. A lot of people are mad at the outcome of the previous election, and they were mad at the, and I think correctly, their characterization of some unfair efforts to smear Judge Moore with things that they couldn't prove, like the allegations. I understand, but let's not think with our hearts. Let's think with our heads here for a second. Let's not use anger over how that played out to justify a dumb decision. Let's actually choose the candidate that is best suited to defeat Doug Jones. The people that just want to live that out again and get a do-over, that's not a smart move. Pick a candidate that has a much better shot of winning and will also be conservative. And if you want to go with that, there are several other good options on the table right now. It makes no sense to hang on to Judge Moore on this. All right, it looks like we've got a call on line one. Good afternoon. What's your name?
Hey, John. How's it doing?
Yeah, what's your take on all of this?
First of all, I mean, I think he's done as far as politics are concerned. I may be wrong, but I don't think I am. And I think that...
Well, now, people have said that about Judge Moore before. They've said Judge Moore's... his political career is done several times, and he has made a comeback.
Yeah, I know he has, but I don't see it after this point. And I think that the climate has to be right. The timing has to be right.
Sure.
And I don't think that it's just my opinion, of course.
Right.
Of course, I could be wrong. I've been wrong a whole lot in my life.
No, I agree with you. I was just playing the other side of it.
Yeah, I know you were. It's just hard for me to believe that he would be able to come back from this. And I think that, well, the president's right on it, and I think that it's best that it's a shame that the things that happened, because I do think he was railroaded, as you stated. I think there were some things there, but certainly not to the degree. Money, as we well know, had a whole lot to do with what transpired with all of that, and the incredible amount of money that was put into our state from the donkey side was had the greatest impact on it. And I don't think that he's ever going to, I just don't see him ever making a push for it again. And I wish we had somebody fresh and new that would be able to do that, as opposed to some of the ones that we've seen before. But that's, you got to have name recognition, and that's one of the difficulties that you have. And I hope that, you know, whomever it would be that has some kind of conservative leanings, at the very least, has to be better than what we have now.
Well, so, I mean, I think I know what the answer is going to be, but since I know that you would pick Jim Ziegler if given the choice.
Of course.
How about the candidates that have already announced that are definitely running? Who out of that field would you pick right now?
Give me the list and let me make my choice except for Ziegler.
Right now we've got Tommy Tuberville, Bradley Byrne, and Mooney. Alan Mooney. Is it Alan? Yeah, Alan Mooney.
Yeah, I don't know anything about him. I mean, I guess, you know, I don't know that much about Bradley Byrne, and I know that he's supposed to have some name recognition, and I don't know a lot about him. I mean, I guess out of those three, I'd probably pick Tubbs. And I don't know why, other than I think that he would, I don't really think he has a prayer to win. And I think the football has more power than you think it does. And I think a lot of people are going to be anti. And all he has to do is win the. If he wins the nomination, he can win.
Yeah, I think so. And that's one thing that I was making the point here earlier is I'm looking at the slate of candidates and I'm thinking, okay, this person versus Doug Jones, he wins, he wins, he wins, he wins. And then I get to Roy Moore, I'm like, maybe?
Probably not. And here's the biggest thing that bothers me about Roy Moore, quite unlike most people that have issues with him, but the biggest thing with me is the interview that he had with you.
Right, the interview that was on this show.
I thought he was horrible.
Which I think I interviewed him three times.
Well, I know this. One of the times that I was sitting, and I listened very, very closely, and I think I could have made a better case for being a senator than he did that day. That was just a horrible interview, and I was not expecting that at all because I saw him as a bright-minded, good-communicating individual, and he just wasn't that. It was very disturbing, if you ask me, because you know which one I'm talking about.
Oh, I know.
It was awful. He didn't know what he wanted to do.
And anybody that wants to hear that interview again, it's on my website. You can check it out on our page on SoundCloud. Go back and listen to it, by all means. But yeah, he didn't really impress me either, and that, to me, was a much bigger problem than any of the stuff that, because I tried to, since they couldn't prove it, I tried to take that out of consideration when looking at the candidates anyway. But you're right. I mean, he seemed woefully unprepared for being a U.S. senator.
I mean, good grief, I've had eighth grade class officer selections with interviews that the kids expected that.
Right.
I mean, you basically just ask, what policies do you want to do? I mean, you could tell more accurately than I could, but he didn't know what he wanted to do with the job.
Well, and that's
he didn't know anybody that he would pick for, wasn't it Speaker of the House?
Right. One of the, people that don't remember that interview, what happened is I asked him several questions, and one of the pillars of his campaign, one of the things that he talked about in his stump speech and everywhere else was, we need to get rid of Mitch McConnell, which, by the way, I agree with. Mitch McConnell is a terrible majority leader. But I asked him a follow-up question to that and said, well, who out of the senators would you pick to replace him? And his answer, which unfortunately was an answer he gave a lot in this interview, was, I don't know. I'll figure it out when I get there.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's unacceptable for a kid in FFA, much less somebody that wants to be a U.S. senator.
Right. I mean, if that is something, it's an actual talking point of your campaign, and you never even considered, well, we're going to have to replace him with somebody. Maybe we should at least have a couple names.
Yeah, I don't know. But
it was a really bad interview, and that's one of the things that I was saying is, out of all of the people that we've listed, he seems to be the one that is the most ill-prepared for the office, despite being in politics for, what, 20, 30 years now?
Mm-hmm. That's true. So,
anyway.
Well, I'll let you
all right,
get
thanks
back
so
after,
much.
So
yeah.
Take care.
All right, appreciate it. John from Millbrook, as always, a great call. All right, so there is a lot to get to, but the thing is, it's Wednesday. I got to get to Bible class. I know a lot of you guys have to get to Bible class. And because of our little technical snafu, unfortunately, we just do not have time to go through anything else. But we will get to a lot of it tomorrow. There is a lot more local news from the state of Alabama, by the way, specifically in relation to this particular race, this election, when it comes to Doug Jones, that we are going to get to tomorrow. But I hate to say it, got to get to Bible class. That's more important. You're going to have to wait for that tomorrow. We are going to do the chaplain's report, and then we are going to wrap it up.
In 1775, the Continental Congress created the Chaplain Corps. Under the command of General George Washington, each soldier was required to attend worship service every Sunday. While other armies advanced on their feet, Washington's troops advanced on their knees. It's time for the Chaplain's Report with Caleb Colquitt on tactics.
Today's Chaplain Report, it's really not going to be a lengthy one. We're not going to get super philosophical, not going to be complicated, because I believe this, and I've always believed this, you let the scripture speak for itself. You don't have to editorialize much. You don't have to get complicated. And the actual content of this verse sort of plays to that idea. So we're going to go ahead and look at something that Jesus himself said in the Gospel of John. chapter 8, verses 31 through 32. So Jesus was saying to those Jews who had believed him, "If you continue in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free." So there's just a couple things that I wanted to point out about this verse specifically. First of all, one of the things that Jesus does is he connects truth to action. And Jesus was a teacher. That was a favorite title that people would use for him, and appropriately so. Rabbi, Rabboni, teacher, they all mean the same thing. Even people that don't believe in Jesus, that think he was a nutcase, that believed he was the Son of God, or believed that he wasn't the Son of God, they still believe that Jesus was a good teacher. That is a common title that is given to him. It's sort of the way that we think of him as being this amazing teacher and conveyor of truth. So when it comes to Christ, he is saying that there is an action tied with that, because if you look at the first part of that verse, he says, "To continue in my word, then you become disciples of mine, and you will know the truth." In other words, this is conditional language. To know the truth, you have to live out the word of Christ. Now, typically when we think of truth, and I think that there is some legitimacy to this, what we think of as truth is knowing things that are true. In other words, we know facts that are accurate, and thus we know truth. But a concept that Jesus conveys many times in his ministry is that knowing something is more than just having information. And this is something that may get a little bit lost in translation when we're looking at the English version of our Bibles. In Greek, to know something is a very intimate kind of relationship. In other words, when we know something, we know it, we experience it. It's kind of the difference between somebody knowing the workings of a car and being able to do something with it. A great example of this, and it's a goofy analogy, but it works here. There's an episode of Big Bang Theory where, and just for those of you who aren't familiar with the show, there it's about these four friends, and they're very nerdy. They, you know, one's an engineer. There's a couple that are theoretical physicists, and these are really, really smart guys. They have their car break down, and one of the friends asks, "All right, who here knows anything about internal combustion engines?" And they're all like, "Oh, yeah, we know about internal combustion engines." Like, okay, let me rephrase that. Who here knows how to fix an internal combustion engine? Then they're like, no. It's the same principle. You see, to really know truth, to really know the truth of Christ, to understand that he is the Son of God and that his teachings are truth, we have to engage in them. It's a knowing in the sense that we understand it because we've lived it. We understand it because we've done it and seen that it works firsthand. It's not enough to just know the scripture. That's important. That's a first step. You obviously have a harder time living it out if you don't know what the scripture is saying. But the point is, when Christ talks about knowing the truth, what he means is living out the words and the commandments that he left us. It's not enough to just have information about Christ's life. There are people that are Bible scholars that don't believe that Christ was the Son of God and are not saved. They have knowledge about who Jesus was. They have knowledge about what he taught, but they aren't living it, and as such, they don't really know the truth in the sense that Christ was trying to convey it. And so it's really important for us as Christians to remember that the first step to knowing truth, and by extension, or some people would say it's not even a different statement, because God is truth, the only way to know God is to follow his commandments and live by his word. We can know about God by knowing facts about him that we read from the scripture, but if we want to know God, have a relationship with him, be a child to the Father, there's only one way to do that, and that's obedience. And then what does Jesus do with that? He says, once you know the truth, it will set you free. And he goes on later in the same chapter to explain that it's a freedom from sin. It's a freedom of this slavery to this burden of sin that mankind has. But before we get into all that, before we even look at that part, what Jesus explains here is knowing that truth, having that kind of relationship with God to where you live it and you work every single day to be obedient to his word, you start learning, hey, this stuff really does work. This isn't just a bunch of arbitrary rules that God came up with because he's God and he can do what he wants. He actually did this to help us. He actually made it a point to give us this information because he knows that having it makes us better people. It makes us happier. It gives us a sense of joy, not just temporary happiness. And when we live our lives by it, we're more pleasing to him, and we have a better life as a result. And the people around us, their lives are improved by that as well. You can only learn that, and you can only be convicted of that and really understand it once you've gone through the effort to transform your life and live by the teachings of Jesus Christ. It just goes way deeper than knowing a bunch of facts about him and moves to actually knowing him. It's the difference in reading somebody's biography or their obituary and having actually known them. That's the kind of difference that we're talking about. And once we really do have that knowledge, once we really do have that relationship with God, it sets us free. Free from the burden of sin and free from the burden of ourselves, of our own sinful natures. And we become the people that God always created us to be, bearing that image of his son. That's what sets us free. Stay the course, friends.
Tactics is a production of News Radio 1440 and Cumulus Media Montgomery. Any opinions expressed on this program are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Cumulus Media. The theme song for Tactics is 6 Foot Town by Big and Rich. Graphics by Jessica Dawson. Broadcast studios provided by Cumulus Media Montgomery. Location studios provided by the Dalreda Church of Christ. Copyright 2019.